Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jason Lewis, and I'm your host for the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I want to thank you for joining us today for the show that is shaping the way that the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Every week, we want to have honest conversations about what it means to be in one of the sector's least understood, yet most critical roles. Before I introduce today's guest, I do want to remind everyone that my four fundraising frameworks are available to your organization. All you've got to do is go to my website, click on the toolbox, and download this free resource. Inside the toolbox, you'll find four frameworks, 1, 2, 3, 4, that will help your organization ensure that everyone understands how fundraising really works. Not quite so sure what I'm talking about, you will have a framework for distinguishing between fundraising cultures, a planning framework that ensures your fundraising efforts are responsive to the opportunities available to your organization, a campaign planning framework for any major fundraising initiative, and as if that's not enough, how about a KPI scorecard that combines my fascination with the science of expertise with your determination to raise more money? If you'd like to download this free resource, go to my website, lewisfundraising.com/toolbox. Again, that's lewisfundraising.com/toolbox. I'll also put a link in the show notes. Today's guest is Kenna Barrett. She has been raising funds for 20 years, very similar to myself. She's raised millions of dollars for a number of organizations, including women's shelters, beach cleanups, children, lawyers, podiatrists, startups with zero money in the bank, and universities with $20 billion endowments. In the course of her career, she's drawn wisdom from every aspect of her experience, everything from her academic background, the latest fundraising research, anecdotes from friends in sales, to closing gifts. All of these have been teaching moments. Kenna, I have been very much looking forward to today's conversation. How about you just introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. Thank you, Jason. And I am delighted to be here. And thrilled to talk with you today about fundraising. I've had a couple decades to think about this and really think about what makes a successful fundraiser. And I think my take is a little bit different than what you might hear or kind of might hear through the grapevine or just, you know, ear to the ground. So I'm really excited to talk about it.
So tell me about what is it this bold opinion about grit that you have when as it relates to fundraising?
Sure. I think that the trait that brings us all together as fundraisers is grit, and that it's not natural talent. And so what this means is some might be tempted to think that if you have a charismatic personality, and again, that's something that's thought of as something you either have or you don't, you know, one of those people that just is really exciting or you like to be around, that's what would make a great fundraiser. But I argue, and I believe that really the key trait is having determination. So because fundraising isn't something that you're either good or bad at right away, it's not just based on a kind of inborn personality. You know, I'm taking aim at that kind of a nativist statement. Fundraising, needs a theory of the inner game. So, Jason, I don't know if you ever heard of this thing, a book called The Inner Game of Tennis. It was by a guy named Timothy Galway. And, you know, I read a spin-off book called The Inner Game of Music because I was a musician as a kid. And instead of focusing on, for tennis, let's say, skills like timing or foot movement or keeping your eye on the ball, it talked about the mental side of the sport. So peak performance, what you needed to do to get your mind in shape for that. And the same with music. So to kind of combat your anxiety and whatnot, you had to look at your mental state. And so I can go into that. But really, I'm positing that the training and advice in our field is too directed toward only the techniques that address the relationship of the fundraiser to the external world, not the inner game or the game that's going on in the mind. So instead of just, oh, here's your charismatic person and here's all they need to do, it really is that determination that you need to have to be a successful fundraiser, and that is really, really key, and that you can work on and you can build that. So it's really like an egalitarian theory of fundraising and saying anyone can really do this. If you care about your cause, you can do this, and I can help talk about how.
When you say inner game, I think I know exactly what you're talking about, but help my listeners, myself and my listeners, understand. Interestingly, I was sharing with a gentleman that I was having lunch with today, that I was having this conversation this afternoon, and having read your notes, I knew that we were going to talk about grit in this inner game. And he went straight to it. He said, yep, that's exactly what our challenges are. So why does this word inner game, here's a guy who's a frontline fundraiser, major gifts officer, when he hears the word inner game, and he coincidentally, he's married to his wife is a psychiatrist, so he knows exactly what the inner game is. So help us unpack that term before we proceed into these other ideas that you've outlined for me.
Sure, absolutely. So really traces back to even the ancients and the ascetics who, for instance, would meditate. And I know meditation is really big these days, but that kind of thought that even turning your mind toward an experience or an emotion that you're having can help bring some calm and some awareness to it. So instead of just going through your day being nervous or angry or you're experiencing different feelings, you can say, wow, I'm getting annoyed right now, or, you know, I'm stuck in traffic. Boy, I'm annoyed. And that even just that realization helps calm yourself down. And so with fundraising, that inner game is looking at your experience and how your experience is driving your thoughts and then your actions in this field. So for instance, you get a lot of no's when you're doing anything related right to sales or asking people for something. And so what does that cause in the body? And then looking at that, oh, I'm getting a little nervous, and little tricks that you can do to kind of change that experience for yourself so you can go out and feel more comfortable. But it's also about being okay with that experience. And I think that's the piece of it that is important for me as somebody that certainly was not that charismatic, like, oh, this is really easy. Raising lots of money just flows right toward me right away. And just to change that into, it's okay to feel however you feel as you're going forward. And the key being to kind of recognize that, find some tricks to kind of calm yourself, but also just be okay with where you are and go forward. And I think that's what that inner game is.
Now, I think did I find the word introvert as a way you describe yourself in your notes? Did I see that in here somewhere? Okay. Is the inner game, my wife, so I'm a very extroverted individual. My wife would describe herself as an introvert. Is there more of an inner game going on for an introverted person, or am I misinterpreting that?
There may be, yeah. I mean, it'd be interesting to hear from extroverts who, you know, on how they approach fundraising. But certainly for someone that is introverted or even a shy person, so I guess the difference being introverts maybe enjoy more time to themselves. Shy people may be extroverted, but they get nervous in social situations. So certainly since fundraising really is about people, there may be more of that inner game going on. I think people that are introspective tend to kind of really notice how they might be feeling on a certain occasion. So that may be possible. Yeah, I'd love to hear what you think.
Maybe, I don't know.
Maybe you're one of the people that doesn't think about it. Yeah.
I was at an event this weekend, and I was talking to a woman who she herself is in fundraising, and she's a mother, and she's trying to figure out her daughter's future because her daughter's in college and stumbling around college for the second time. And she described her daughter as an introvert. And I said, well, maybe you ought to introduce her to fundraising. And she said, oh, she can't do that. She's an introvert. She's not outgoing and friendly, da, 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 da.
Right.
And I said, oh no, I have met, I've gotten to know this woman that's in Texas who is a strong, confident introvert. She's a major gifts officer. She's a reader. She's in her head, all that sort of stuff. But I got to tell you, she's one of the sharpest fundraisers that I've ever talked to. And I know she's had, even in her young career, I know she's had much success already. And so at times I kind of wonder if some of the best of us, do tend to lean on that introverted side. You know, there's more going, you know, there's, yeah, so I don't know, but that's not the, yeah. That wasn't so much the focus of the conversation. One of the things you say here, and I certainly tend to agree with you, and I don't know that there's going to be too many people listening that are going to push back on this, but this idea of fundraisers are made, not born. What's your thoughts on mm-hmm. that?
Yeah, I mean, I was one of those people, and I think, again, you know, getting out of that nativist thinking of, oh, that's just, you know, your innate talent or not, certainly unpacking that. But you do hear it, right? Oh, there's that legendary fundraiser there. Oh, you just want to, you know, all they have to do is open their mouths and talk and people open their wallets. And that's more lore than anything else, I think. I was one of those fundraisers that was made and not born. So, for instance, I had, you know, academic degrees in esoteric fields. I never imagined I'd be, quote, a salesperson. But when you look back, you know, I was, and even my first job in college was as a canvasser for an environmental organization. And, you know, what I mean is that I didn't sort of have the gift of gab. I didn't just open up a door, knock on a door, someone opened it up and handed me some money. I had to memorize my rap, which is the rap in this organization was like what your pitch is in fundraising. I had to memorize that and practice it. And I found that when you apply that kind of a skill that you get in any kind of academic setting, let me memorize this, study this, or practice or think about it, let me learn the issues, I could sound persuasive and I could have success. And so that's what I mean by being made. It's going through the habits that you form with yourself in order to be successful. And I knew of a guy who I worked with in that college job, the canvassing job, who got a no from someone, went back to his car, thought it out, practiced, knocked back again on that door and said, I'm sorry, I was wondering if you could give me a second shot at this. And he actually came away with a donation. So, you know, that's what I mean by that. For instance, doing cold calls to alumni, you know, it's not that phone presence that it is. It's that you memorize things. You think about what are the leads I could lead out with. What can I say to this person? And then what might they say back? And how can I work toward getting this meeting or this conversation, this appointment to happen.
So this idea of grit that Duckworth came up with, I don't know, her book came out maybe 8 or 10 years ago mm-hmm. as a result of her research. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that's such a useful concept for us in fundraising?
Absolutely. So Angela Duckworth came up with this idea. I believe she was studying students just at all different levels and found that when you control for other variables, that grit was really more important than even what might be kind of considered academic intelligence or other features in determining how successful that child was. And so, of course, in fundraising, right, you know, grit is what you need. It's that passion and perseverance for long-term goals. It's what you need when you're knocking on doors and everyone said no, or when you've made 10 calls or sent 10 emails and no one has gotten back to you yet. And so as someone experienced in the field, I'm able to tell myself, all right, you know, they'll come back, they'll circle around, it always does, and that it'll work out. But you have to stick with it. And I've seen people who weren't necessarily, again, that sort of charismatic or that person that had that emotional intelligence right away where you just found yourself wanted to have a beer with them every day. People that didn't have that, but they had grit. They made mistakes, even serious mistakes, picked themselves off, said, you know, I want to succeed here, brushed themselves off and used that experience to become even more effective. And then I've seen people who had that winning personality. People I've, you know, that seen in job interviews, for instance, where everyone thought, gosh, that's the perfect person for that role. And then it hasn't worked out. So it really, that's why I think that grit is really, really critical.
So one of the things that I often say to audiences when I'm speaking to them, and I don't recall whether I use this term in my book, but I refer to fundraising today as being in its messy adolescence. And I tend to think that adolescence is sort of where we begin to develop some of that grit. It's where the world sort of really starts to let us down, but it's also where we start to have to be more honest and real with ourselves. So we can't sort of project all of our problems externally, you know, can't rationalize everything. Does that line up?
Oh, absolutely. Yep, absolutely. And I think, you know, getting back to something you said earlier about what our presuppositions are and what the reality is that that grit and that kind of stick-to-itiveness can be really effective. And there was an article about from a Wharton professor named Adam Grant who found the introverts, getting back to your introverts kind of question, were better managers of certain groups of teams than extroverts were. And these teams were the ones that were proactive, that had made up of people that wanted to take initiative. So those introverts kind of didn't try to control the process or unmotivate their staff, take things over. They let those flowers bloom, as it were. And so I think being effective as a manager or a leader, as well as an individual, a gift officer on the ground, can happen no matter what your supposed personality type is.
So let me go a little bit off the grid with a little bit of what you just said, because part of my critique on where fundraising finds itself today is not that we can't find enough persistent, passionate individuals who would get out there and be frontline fundraisers. But I think we've got more of a supervisory problem. So you've had your share of bosses. In your career, you have to have had your experiences where you had bosses that got this and didn't, where they got the importance of grit, where they got the important, you know, they got the value of meaningful relationships, of like they understood why being maybe a little more introverted in this might work. Have you had both those good and bad experiences with a boss?
Yeah, it's funny. I absolutely have. I've had exactly that. And so sometimes you come into even organizations that are composed of people that have, if you do different personality studies, maybe have a high level of extroversion or sociability.
Yeah.
And they look at the rest of the folks in the team that aren't, can't quite, you know, put it together in their head. So I've been in that situation. I've also been in situations where really the management is very much driven by grassroots efforts. And I find that I really enjoy that. And I think most people do, where you can just be creative, come up with ideas, do your thing, do how it works for you. And again, with fundraising, it really is the eye and the prize. So you mentioned, you know, passion as a part of this, but it's passion toward a goal.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that and having that frustration tolerance, so like you keep working at it. And I think that being in a good environment where you have supervisors that understand how to let people kind of find their own way, and that there's not one right way to go about this job, is really, really critical.
You know, you used the word mistake a few minutes ago. One of the things that I'm always trying to impress upon fundraisers who find themselves in the smaller shops is they're oftentimes working with supervisors. Oftentimes in the smallest of shops, they're just working for the ED, the senior most person.
Yeah.
There's not a layer of management there. And therefore they're not oftentimes working for fundraisers themselves. And so they don't end up working for people who've invested their career in understanding the messiness of what happens in these relationships. That's not always a bad thing. You know, you and I have been on the front line enough. We've been across the lunch table enough to know that negotiating a major gift sometimes doesn't happen very seamlessly. I oftentimes say to my clients who've never experienced major gift fundraising before, I often say, look, it's going to feel like the only word for you to sort of get comfortable with is it's going to feel like a give and take negotiation, and it's going to feel messy at times. Have you found that? I'm guessing you found that to be true as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it is. And I think part of why I wanted to do this podcast was to talk about that piece, about working with people that are not, quote, fundraisers. That's not their main job.
Yeah.
Or it's not their job title, right? Executive directors and so forth. And I've done a little bit of coaching too of people that are in that executive director role. And of course they say, oh, well, I don't like fundraising, or don't know how to do it. Again, thinking that there's got to be some sort of personality archetype that does fundraising. Quote, I don't right. do that, but someone else does.
Somebody else right? does, and, right. And you're a miracle worker, right?
Yeah. Right, exactly. They're the miracle where they bring it in, you know. So just, I've had someone say, wind me up and tell me what I need to do and I'll do it. That, you know, that at least that's good, right? That could be worse. They could say they don't want to do it. But
right.
But yes, how do you help people feel comfortable that there's not one type of person that does this, that it is, as you said, a negotiation, a conversation. It is about building relationships, of course, and that things do get messy. There's not always a quick resolution, and sometimes it really is for the long term. You may have a great conversation, and then you need to circle back in another 6 months. And so just how do you prepare people for the way it really looks and for that patience and, again, that playing that mental game with oneself? I'm like, I can do this. Yes, I'm the executive director and I have no experience, but I'm going to try to do this and I'm going to just connect with this person. You know, no matter who I am, I'm an introvert, I'm an expert, I'm whatever I am, I can connect with this person about this shared concern. And so making it about what you're trying to raise the funding for can really help build those bridges. And if that executive director cares about that cause, that'll come through. And that's really, really half the battle.
So you and I are of that generation of fundraisers. We sort of, I would say anybody who's been in the field for say 20 years, like you and I both, we're not those early people who sort of brought this through, early in the process, but we're this generation that sort of have come through. I think we're sort of that last generation that sort of explains ourselves as sort of having come through the back door. Mm-hmm. But if you and I were talking to a young person who's thinking about fundraising and they can sort of spot that prospective boss, so the person they're interviewing with who says, I really don't want to have anything to do with fundraising, would you even encourage that person to go work for them?
Depends on the other aspects. How much money are they getting paid?
Right, how much are they getting paid? You know, right.
Or what kind of stepping stone is it? But certainly it would be an educational process. You're absolutely right. If someone's going to say that, you know, you're going to have to spend a lot of your time educating. And, you know, it just has been my experience. I don't know about yours, Jason, that the people, the constituents that are going to support an organization really do want to hear from the leadership. And so that does put a lot of onus on the executive team to be out there fundraising. So it is a real give and take between what can I as a development person take on? What content can I learn? How can I build my own legitimacy in this? Maybe if I'm working at a university, I take some classes where I talk about how my background relates to the content area. Maybe there's some connection I have with this institution to build that legitimacy so I could do as much as I can as a fundraiser without that executive needing to come on every visit with me. And then you got to know when is the right time to bring in that executive so that they can help move a gift to closure. So yes, you gotta weigh all these things when you're taking a job.
Yeah, use the word legitimacy. I'm listening to that. I listen to language. What's the word legitimacy mean to you in the context of fundraising?
I think it means, how does this person, if I'm a donor thinking, this person sitting across from me, what's their skin in the game, right?
Okay.
They are going to be a paid fundraiser, paid solicitor in some sense, right? They work
yep.
for the organization. So
totally.
They've got an interest. What is it that is above and beyond their own self-interest that would make them care about this? Because that's what I would want to know if I were supporting an organization. And so that's what you have to think about as a fundraiser. Why do I care about this?
Why do I legitimately sort of fit into the equation?
Yeah. Well, how do I fit into the equation? And so as sometimes when I was working with universities, I would just draw on my own academic background, and it
yeah.
may be only slightly related, but it's like, at least I've studied this, or I have, you know, done this kind of a program or done that kind of research. And I think that really works wonders to just have people kind of believe in you and understand why you're there.
You know, that's interesting. So when I was at the Epilepsy Foundation in Washington, D.C. for a couple of years as a major gifts officer, and I always felt like I legitimately fit, because as a youngster, I had a seizure disorder. And I remember my boss one time saying something to me, sort of basically asking me why, because oftentimes in my conversations with major donors, I mean, when you work for the Epilepsy Foundation and you're meeting with a major donor, seizure disorders of some sort or another is going to come up. Usually it's they themselves or it's their children or something. And I never hesitated to bring up my own experience with the disorder. And my boss seemed to be uncomfortable with that. And I confronted her on it. I said that I certainly didn't use the word legitimacy wherever we were bantering about this. But it was almost as if that was sort of part of what was making me legitimate, I guess. Don't know if it was necessary, but I know it was, and I certainly know it was what it helped me make that connection with those people. Cause it was like, okay, this guy's going to ask me for a check, but he's sort of been in the trenches. He knows what we're doing. He knows what's going on.
Right. He cares.
Yeah, he cares.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's got a vested interest in what we're doing. That's interesting. So, Kenna, if you were giving some advice before we wind this up, if you were giving some advice to the people that I was writing to in that book, a lot of people like yourself have been reading that book, but I was actually writing the book to somebody who's about 5 years in, presumably getting their CFRE for the first time and thinking critically about their fundraising career, thinking, okay, I can do this. I'm in this for the long term. What would your advice be to that person right now?
Sure. Well, one thing I could pick up with is what you started to mention, which was the idea of a narrative. So the first thing I would say is that a lot of this is about a narrative. Can you help create a narrative of the organization, a narrative of the cause, and then a narrative of your relationship to it? And if you can tell that story, you're going to be successful and you will enjoy yourself, because it really is about these. You go on visits, you have these wonderful conversations with people, and it starts with that narrative, and that's what's going to take you to the deeper relationship and the monetary contributions. So, but building your narrative is an experience along the way, and that again gets back to those skill sets you need to build as a fundraiser, not the external, but that internal, just having the ability to stick to it and to know that it takes time.
So Kenna, when I was writing the book, I was writing it to not people like yourself, myself, you and I, who've been in the field for a couple of decades, but I was writing the book to people who were maybe 5 years into their fundraising career and were starting to think more critically about what it is they had chosen to get involved with, why they were choosing fundraising as their professional path. If you were talking to that person today, what would your advice be to that person?
Sure, and I think it starts with something you had been hinting toward in our last conversation or question, which was the idea of having a narrative, having your own story about why you're with this organization, helping the organization have a story about why it exists and what cause it's trying to help. Because fundraising really is about these relationships, of course, but it's about an emotional connection to something, to some cause. People who make big commitments do so because they feel connected to something. They want to make a difference. I know it sounds trite, but I've had so many donors tell me, yep, this doesn't make a real emotional connection for me, but this other thing does. And so if you can build that narrative, I think it is a really good, it's a great field to be in, of course, but you'll be all set. And of course, getting back to my premise, to just build it, to experiment with that, takes self-awareness. It takes the ability to stick to things. And it takes, again, that sort of recursive, okay, what did I say in this conversation? How can I, how did that person react? How can I continue to refine that narrative, or that it really is a pitch, but it really starts with just story, right? So I think just having that commitment to seeing it through, seeing what happens, experimenting with how you're going out there and talking to people and what you're saying. There's no fixed set of guidelines. That's another thing that's really important, I think, Jason, to emphasize, is that you're going to learn along the way. No one can tell you exactly what to say. No one can tell you, you know, what narrative you need to have, because it's going to be different from the person that sits right next to you. They have a different relationship to the cause. So just starting out with that story and being comfortable in making tweaks, getting feedback, and moving forward, I think is the route to success.
Critically important. Yes, that was a wonderful place to sort of wrap up. Genna, if somebody wants to reach out to you, if they've listened to our conversation, they know how to find me, but they may not know how to find you. So what would be the best way for them to do that?
Sure, they are welcome to shoot me an email. My personal email is kennabarrett18@gmail.com.
Okay. I will make sure to put that in the show notes. And I'll also put a link to Duckworth's book as well. And anything else you'd like me to share as well, I'll be happy to do that.
Please do. Yep. Thanks, Jason.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.